You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Proudly brought to you by Area 52, our good friends, talking everything we can about the board games, the card games, and all those kind of tabletop games on this episode 197 on Thursday the 11th of January. But sometimes on the weekend, we don't always play these tabletop games. Sometimes we just have to go outside and be incredibly manly as we are.
Oh,
and we
yeah.
discovered that recently with Mark, who tapped into his inner Viking and realised that he's a dab hand at the old throwing axe.
I thought you were going to say inner caveman.
No, well, either which way. And I found out that myself, something I never knew, that I'm a bit of a sharpshooter on the old air rifle.
Ooh.
Especially if I'm aiming at blue goats that go around a track constantly.
Well, every Thursday, your go-to meal is a goat croquette.
Yes, exactly.
So I think you and that animal have a particular affinity.
Exactly. And then we finally found out, Garth, your hidden talent is that you bruise like a peach.
That's true. That's really, really true. I am more purple than man right about now.
Yes, from your shotgun wound.
Yeah, I don't know how to hold a shotgun, which I think I should take as a compliment.
Yeah.
Let's make love, not war, I reckon.
I'm not so
sure. Not the three of
us.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, I don't know. I've got to take out those blue goats they were asking for.
Anyway, let's not talk about our good friend Orin's Barksday anymore. Let's talk about what's coming up on the show, which is... We're going to talk about what we've been playing, which is a game of Victoriana Horror in London Dread. We're going to do a bit more of our reviews of what happened in 2017.
Yeah, because somehow we keep running out of time.
That's right.
It's almost like we have good banter.
Leon has some popular culture stuff.
Yes.
Being the culture vulture that he is. We're going to talk about board game apps. And at last, finally, for all those that have been holding your breath, we are going to draw our The Campaigner magazine competition.
Exactly. I have been doing a whole bunch of computations and I've got the winner.
We've got all that and, of course, the other stuff that we will run out of time to talk about and more coming up tonight on the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Yeah, well, there you go. That was Emily Rusak with Have You. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And now, Mark, it's time for you to tell us, what have we been playing lately?
We've been playing a little game called London Grid.
Grid?
Yeah, London Grid.
What's London Grid then?
It's what us cool people call London Dread.
Right, oh.
That's right. Now, we've been playing London Dread. And let me tell you a little bit about this game. It is the late 1890s. The British Empire stretches around the globe. London has grown to become the greatest city in the world. It's a time of innovation, prosperity, and expansion. Not board game expansion.
Oh, my God.
But every paradise has a snake. In the heart of the capital, something terrible is rising. You can hear it in the voice of the madman crying out in his psychotic visions in the night. Feel it in the cold, relentless rain. Smell it in the noxious fumes that seep from 1,000 chocolate factories. Darkness is coming. There is no hiding. The only way out is through. You pray your companions have the minerals to follow you through to the end. There's no need to speak. You know the questions that grind inside their troubled minds. Will you live through the night? Will you survive the London Dread? Ooh. So it's an expanding world of Victorian horror inspired by the works of such geniuses as Edgar Allan Poe, Joseph Conrad, H.P. Lovecraft, and Ed Brubaker. It sets the scene for investigation stories of murder, madness, and apocalyptic heroism in which a few determined individuals face off against the horrors of the great unknown.
And it's by Grey Fox Games, who also do Deception Murder in Hong Kong.
There you go.
So they've just got murder on tap.
Wow, they might need to speak to somebody about that.
There you go. So this is a game designed in 2016 by Asger Johansson with some lovely gritty art by Snorri Krach. Both of those...
Oh, Snorri.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Snozzers.
Both of those gentlemen are Danish. And their little company together is called Plotmaker Games. And obviously this, as Leon said, this is released by Grey Fox Games. And in this game, players take the role of investigators who are trying to uncover plots on the way to confronting a finale. And you're unravelling a story as you go. It's a very, I'd say, gritty and thematic game.
Oh, it's a tad dark.
It is, yeah.
The backstory of my character was he was basically a thug who was escorting a cart one day and decided against rules to look underneath the tarp in the back. And in the back, he found a whole heap of dead bodies, one of which was his wife.
Oh, my goodness.
And then he went, the card said it in quite nicer words, but he went insane.
Yes. And so the game is broken into a series of stories, each story with two chapters, except for the sort of the beginning tutorial game that only has one. So in the chapters, in the game, you've got two parts to the game very much. You've got the first timed phase with the ticking of the app timer if you use it.
I will
talk about the app again shortly. But you've got, if you play on the normal hardness, difficulty.
You sound like Leon.
Yeah, you can't good speak too.
If you play on the normal difficulty level, you've got 12 minutes where you're basically planning out how you are going to be moving around London.
And 12 minutes is heaps of time.
Sometimes.
No, it really wasn't. It moved on at quite a clip.
We'll talk about that, no doubt.
To be fair, it did take 12 minutes, but it didn't feel like it.
Yeah. So you're planning out what you're going to do. Very much like the game that comes to mind for me is Space Alert. So in very quick time, you've basically got to plan out all the things you're going to do during the day, evening, and night. And then what you do in the next phase is you basically unfold those things. And so in this case, you've got this lovely clock, which has how many little squares? 12 little squares all around it every 2 hours. And you all move around and say, okay, at 6 a.m., I'm going here, you're going there, Leon's going there, and then we work through what we're uncovering, and I'll talk about what we uncover soon. But you basically work your way around that clock, all unravelling the actions, unravelling the plot as you go, and that's where the action of the game happens. But the tension of that timed part at the beginning, you're really having to think about all the things that you want to do.
Yeah, yes, you're 100% right. Now, just to lay it out there for everyone who's not seen it, the board is basically a top-down view of ye olde London, England. It's made up into four quadrants. You've got the north, south, east, and west.
Mm-hmm.
And the setup for the game will be that there are various plots that you've got to uncover throughout London, leading you towards the big, bad, whatever it is that you're going to be fighting in the final battle or the final whatever. And the curious part about it is that you've got to unveil plots in the right order.
Yes.
And you've got to work together. This is a full co-op game. There is no traitor, even though I can't believe I'm looking you in the eyes while I say there is no traitors here. But it's top-down looking at London, and you get a really good feel because it mixes not deck building, but it's hand management with programming with the physical board. I think it ticks a lot of boxes in terms of mechanics.
Yeah, so you've got 24 cards face down, six in each area, and at the start of the time phase, the first thing you're doing is you start flipping over cards. So you'll have, I think it's four, five, or six plot cards that you have to find. Now, the plot cards are actually just a placeholder. It'll just say plot, and then you've got a little stack.
Why don't say plot? A plot.
I think it was more
really gravitas, you know, really heavy. It's a serious thing. It's the plot progression.
I think it was more plot somewhere in between those two.
Okay, right.
Not plot.
So you've got a stack of plot cards at the side that'll be, I was going to say numbered, but they're actually lettered. And as you uncover the plot holder spots, you take the next plot that you find and put them out there. Interestingly, sometimes you can game a little bit because you might say, well, let's go west first because you always start in the west. So let's flip the west cards first so I can find that plot. So you'll go there first and moving around the board. But then every other spot in a four-player game has a dread card. Now, on the back of the card, it's just a sort of red card back with two little skulls, which is the eponymous symbol for dread. And so if you don't flip the card over at the end of the chapter, you get two dread for that. And dread is bad.
dread is bad.
The more dread you have, the harder it is to win the game with the antagonist in the final showdown. That's what you're working towards. But then if you flip the card, you'll have some sort of a challenge that you have to do that you may cost you from two up to, I think the highest one I've seen is six dread. And how these challenges work is you have a number of icons. Now, all throughout the game, you see these icons. So you have a bull for strength. You have a lion for courage. You have a gun for guns. You have a peacock for charm, a snake, which I'm sure is an octopus, for guile. You have a dove for spirit and an owl for lore. You've got a cog for tech, and you've got a bull skull demony thing, which is like magic.
So you've got all these symbols meaning all these different emotions and state of mind and stuff, and then you've got gun that stands for gun.
That's right. Weapons, it stands for weapons.
Oh, that's a bit better.
Yeah. But you, so you've sort of got the six like personality traits, if you like, and then you've got, they call them secondary abilities, but things like tech and guns and magic, which are less about your personality and more about what you can do.
Sure.
There's six characters you can choose from, and they all have a different mix of those personalities. And what they, so they add generally three icons that you can use in a challenge. There'll be two of the ones I mentioned, and then there'll be a wild one. Then each character will have a special ability that they get through using a virtue token, which is, I think it's like a Holy Grail type thing, picture on it. But they all add a different thing by playing their virtue token.
And they're a once per scenario use. So yep. You want to use those really, really wisely.
Although sometimes there are ways in the plots That's to true. Get one back.
That's very true.
And then you will have items. So you'll start with an item and there are other items you can find.
Or as they're called in Time Stories, it EMs.
Yeah. Yes. That was the stupidest thing we've ever done.
Yes. And you can tap them as a once-off, or you can discard them for a bigger ability. Anyway, all these things are the way that you contribute these icons to meet a challenge. So one challenge might be, okay, to get rid of three dread, you've got to have three icons, a combination of guile and charm.
Yes.
And so basically people who have the ability to generate that those icons, they will want to go there and have that many icons, and that means they basically solve that card and it goes off the board.
Insta success for that card.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and if you don't have the ability, part of the teamwork is getting me, who have some of those stats, and someone else who has the other bits that we need on the same card at the same time, at the right time of day.
Yeah,
but there can also be a luck factor because of the other cards.
Ah, the confidence cards.
Yeah.
That's right. So there's a small deck at the start of these confidence cards, which are basically a whole bunch of cards with just, I think most of them have four different icons. So they'll contribute one, two, three, or four icons to the challenge, but you're drawing them blind so you don't know what they are.
Yeah, they're the equivalent of like a, you don't have the symbols you need, but you need like a die roll, bit of luck to succeed through it, but except it's just a deck of cards with the symbols.
And what happens as well is when you succeed in one of those challenges with the dread card actually gets added to the confidence deck. So later on you can draw it out. Whatever icons are on there, you can add them to a further challenge.
And look, I really like that. I like the fact that your confidence increases as you successfully achieve or overcome whatever it is the objection may be, because all of the cards have a little bit of thematic text, or they'll at least have a title of whatever it is you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So it works within the 1890s London theme that you're accomplishing these bits and pieces. Yeah. But all of that is kind of just to get you on to the next plot. And the next plot. And
it's
the
like
next
stuff
plot,
to do.
All, yeah, they're all a bit different.
Between the plots. Then you've got the plot cards. So with a plot card, again, they'll have the number of Rio. They'll have some icons on there. And they'll have a little story on the back that you get to read out that says, you know, you've wandered down a street. You've gone to the place where you've been told to go, and oh, there's a dead body on there, and you're going to investigate it. And then it'll have a little table of, okay, you're going to roll dice, and depending on how many successes you get, this is what happens.
Yeah.
Now, these horrible dice, I don't know what they're called. I'm going to call them horrible.
We can't say on live radio what they are called because the censor's bleepy machine will just bleep it.
Yeah,
bleeping
but
bleep
these, off. Needless to say, these dice have four blank sides. I mean, come on.
A D6
couldn't
with
it have
four
been
blank
like
sides.
A monster poking its tongue out or something? Blank sides. But anyway, you've got two successes and four blank sides. And how those challenges work is, firstly, you get to use your personality deck.
Woohoo!
So every character has a little deck of six cards. five of which are really good because they will add various icons.
And they're all thematic as well. They have different names on them, so different things that match, like what kind of character you are. Because mine was a thug, so I had things like Bruiser and Barroom Brawler and like Guardsman and stuff like that on it. Except for that one card, you say.
That's right. And then there'll be the sixth card, which is the, I can't think of what they call it, but it's basically your own personal trauma.
Yeah, because mine was old debt. Like, and every character would have been completely different. So my guy obviously used to be a gambler or something back in the day before he became a thug, and an old debt come back to haunt him.
So every time you do a plot challenge, you will shuffle your personality deck and draw one card. It'll either give you extra icons that you can put towards the challenge, or if it's that bad one, it says you contribute nothing, which means those three icons you have at the top of your character sheet don't get added this time. And on top of that, you have to roll the trauma dice. I mean, how many bad dice are in this game? The trauma dice has six sides with six pictures.
Yeah, which is great. There's a picture on every side.
And
it's awesome.
Two of the sides, you get you become unhinged. Two of the sides, you become injured. Both of these are effectively the same thing. It gives you a condition, which basically does nothing except for if you get a second one of that same condition, you if you get it during the chapter, you have to add five dread to the dread track.
Ouch.
If you get it during the final challenge, you're effectively knocked out of the final challenge, and any dice you might contribute in that final challenge you might have been working towards, they don't get counted anymore.
Gonskies.
That's right.
Yeah, so what you're doing is you're, first of all, in the time section, revealing all these cards, or as many cards as you want to, as long as you've revealed all the plots. You don't have to turn over everything. You can just turn over as many as you need to reveal the plots, and there'll be plenty there that are just too dread. Now, because there is the variability where when you turn over a card, it might be worth anywhere from one to six dread, taking two dread might not be a bad thing. But that's only probably the first minute or so of your timed event.
Yes.
The vast bulk of it is then figuring out how the hell are we going to try and accomplish as many of these cards as we can, and more importantly, how are we going to get great outcomes for the various plots to prepare us for the big final big bad guy?
And in most cases, for those plots, you're going to need at least two people to contribute, because often you need four, five, six icons. And the bit that I didn't quite get to around the plots is it'll have the icons, but instead of just getting a certain number of icons, the amount of icons you get a die for each one. They're called action dice, apparently.
Oh,
so
not
you
much
get
action
that. That's right.
No. God, lack of action dice.
So you get an action die for each of the icons you contribute. Then you roll them, and then depending on how many successes you roll, the big thumbs up, you read the little chart on the plot card, and it'll tell you what happens. So it might be you did really badly, and it adds more dread to the
It track. Will be that you've done really badly.
That's right. It might be you're in the clear, which is like, that's a great success, but you get nothing. Or it might be you've done really well, you get to get a random item, or you get to add a guaranteed success die to a future plot or something like that.
Which is awesome. And I really like that, and it's great to have that variability because it's mixed in between the fact that I'm going to this location, I'm going to do the thing just because my stats make it work.
Yeah.
So the challenge for this is all of the time management and basically the programming part of this game, because everyone's only got 12 hours to play around with.
Yeah.
And you've all got to do things, not necessarily in the same parts of London, you've all got to go to various parts of the map, but it costs you 2 hours to do every single thing. So it costs you 2 hours to go from east to west or north to south. It costs you 2 hours to do the event that's on the card, which is fine. But you probably won't get to do everything on the board. And then you've still got to try and coordinate so that enough people are on the various plot cards at the right time of day.
Yes.
Because the day is broken up into morning, afternoon and evening. And only one plot from the one that we played anyway was solvable in the morning.
Yes, you've got to do them at particular times.
So you've got to coordinate your times quite nicely. And that's where it becomes really important to communicate. And it becomes really confusing because there's no easy way to see what everyone is doing on the board at any given time. The game doesn't sort of just show very clearly how you do it. It gives you a whole bunch of tokens.
Yes.
But in the heat of the battle of that 12 minutes or 10 minutes that you've got if you're doing it at a harder level, you've got to remember that a green token means I can do it, and a white token means I need to roll a die, and a red token means I need to do something else. So there's a lot going on in a very short amount of time. And does this game play up to four?
Yeah, so it plays four. So with four, you have four player characters. With two and three, you've got a choice. You can play four characters between you, or they include these ally cards. So I've played quite a bit with two players, and you have, instead of just having all dread cards and plot cards, with two players you have nine ally cards, and you basically go around and you can collect up to three allies, and they each add certain... so that you collect a dog, for example, that gives you courage, or you collect a brass monkey that gives you tech, or a fancy charming gentleman that adds charm.
So they'll give you some extra icons to use towards future
And so you generally find you're doing that, and you're going to each place yourself, then you are combining together. So I really liked how in the four players, you've got to work together a lot more. So you've got the two chapters generally, and then you've got the final showdown, which has a number of challenges, which is a sort of like a combination between the dread cards and the plot cards. They basically just earn you dice, and then you've got the big roll-off where, depending on where you came in the dread track, you've got to roll a certain number of successes to beat the big bad.
And that's a one roll.
A big one-off roll. And you either win and go, yay, and you can move on to the next story because they're episodic.
Yep.
Or we didn't win. Oh, you have to play the scenario again.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing is, though, in that regard, is it's not a long game. That's the thing.
No, once we got the setup and the explanation, then we'd be hammered through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the box it says 60 to 90 minutes, and I found the setup takes a little bit. That's the, you know, setting up the actual deck to play out. But apart from that, you're right, the gameplay itself is quite quick because you're forced to go quickly, obviously, in the timed phase, and then you've got the playing out phase where you're just working it through slowly. Now, I will mention, because I hadn't heard a lot about this game, and when I looked at it and when I played it, I thought, this is really good. Why is it sort of flown under the radar a bit? Now, I did find out it was nominated in the 2016 Golden Geek Best Cooperative Games, along with a little game called Arkham Horror the Card Game, another little game called Black Orchestra, Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle, Mansions of Madness, which was one of the runners-up along with the Arkham Horror, and Mechs and Minions, the winner of that category.
It was a tough year.
It's a strong category. I was about to say, I think this game's good, and it's probably the worst of those games.
I was going to say, the other thing is, it was mentioned by Geek and Sundry. They had a series of articles about the best board games in 2016. The other titles I mentioned, Star Wars Rebellion, Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition, Mechs and Minions, Innis. Oh, I don't agree with that
Innish.
That one, yep. And Scythe. Yeah. So,
it's so good game,
for
bad
people
timing.
Who know about it, it's in good company. Now, let's mention the app just briefly. So, of course, you don't need the app because primarily the app is a timer just to time that 12 seconds and you could use anything. But what they have done, which is so brilliant in the app, is, hey, we're going to make an app anyway. Let's have all the story text that's read at the start and end of the chapter read by a voice actor and included in the app for all the stories.
Yeah, because not everyone has a voice for radio.
No, they don't.
No.
And look, I just think that's a beautiful touch, adding to the darkness, the theme, really sucking you in, because otherwise you're moving around and adding up icons. I don't know that you... If you don't have that and if you don't read the flavour text and stuff, I don't think you really do get sucked into the story, because it's just about... icons and matching icons, counting icons.
Yeah, look, I've certainly thought about this while we were playing it, because it's only on those plot cards, of which there were five.
Four to six, yeah.
Yeah, that you read the actual text and you get the story evolution as it goes from A, B, C and onwards. So I really enjoy those, but yes, and especially when you're just trying to coordinate potentially four different players going in four different directions to solve four different things at the right time, but then coordinating to be in the same spot at the end. You don't really care what the plot is. You don't care what the theme is, to be brutally honest, either. All you're caring about is, do I have the right symbols to succeed in these particular challenges? Yeah. And look, that's a shame, because the board and the cards, and it all looks really great. I like the art style that's on the cards, but you don't really notice that. I certainly didn't really notice that. I was really just focused on those half a dozen symbols on the card. They're large on each card, so they stand out. There you go.
Garth, you were shocked into that.
I was definitely shocked into that, but basically, I didn't necessarily get to enjoy all of the art that this show, this board game had to offer.
Yeah, and I must admit, old Snorri, he has done a really lovely job in the art. The whole game. Look, the fact that the board, if you look close enough, it's an actual old-timey map of London underneath, like a real map.
Yeah.
But because it's got lots of lines and stuff over the top, you know, if you look really closely and you put your glasses on, you can read the names of the streets and everything.
Yes. Yeah. I just want to briefly mention a couple of things. So the first off is the timer. So that's kind of the crux of the main game, is that time section. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned on this show before how time sections in video games, in board games in general, I'd like to think I'm a relatively confident person, but they do make me anxious and I don't often enjoy them. The one in this I didn't have a problem with whatsoever, because I don't know how we've explained it or not, but it's not complicated. There's decisions you need to make, but then the choices you've got to make isn't complicated. You don't have 20 different things you're trying to do. It's just a matter of the order of which you're trying to do them.
And that coordinating between, you know, can we do it with two players? Actually, you and I need to be at this one, whereas you and I need to be at this other one a bit later.
And another thing that probably shouldn't have been in my mind when I was playing this game, but it was. And I acquaint this to TV shows, that if somebody says, oh, there's this really good show that just came out, but it's already been cancelled, I'll just go, probably won't even bother. Mm-hmm. Because why? This game, the replayability I kind of worried about a little bit, because you said there's, what, four or five cases? So
there's four stories.
Yep.
Apart from the first one, they have two chapters. And then the third and fourth story, there's a sort of slight element that changes each time you play
And this
it.
Game has been out for over 2 years now.
No, it only came out
2016. So nearly 2 years.
No. It's only just 2018.
18 months it's been out, if you want to be pedantic.
Yes.
And this is a game that you could easily add more characters, add more plots, add more stories, add more everything, and there's been nothing.
So I think, because it wasn't Kickstarted, it was actually released like a normal game.
Yes.
There is an expansion in the works as of December 2017. The only expansion at the moment have been some promo cards.
Okay.
But yeah, there's definitely an expansion coming out. They're hoping later this year.
Oh, well.
So,
changes my tune completely.
Yeah, look, I've really enjoyed this. I agree totally. I think maybe could have shipped with a couple more stories to give you a bit more playability.
Just a mini another expansion would have been.
I've enjoyed that drama of the timed element teamed up with the story, the app, the evocative nature of this game. I picked this up, one up secondhand quite reasonably, and look, I think it's well worth a try.
Yeah. Well, if you don't want to pay $200 for the new Mansion of Madness, why not, really?
Yeah, that sounds fair enough. Look, it's okay. I had fun.
Yeah.
It's not brilliant. It's not the worst game. I certainly think there are better games out there, but there's always going to be.
Yeah.
So well, anyway.
It is, and this time thing combining with the story, like there's not a heap of games out there. Like I said, mentioned Space Alert.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what gets a little bit over the line. And I'd certainly like to try it at the harder setting.
Yeah.
And see it all fall apart. Which is part of the great fun of Space Alert.
Yep.
But anyway, we better call ends on this one. We've got to talk about 2017 because we're a couple of weeks into 2018
That's right.
And we haven't talked about all the stuff in 2017.
That was a year ago, Garth, apparently.
I know. So anyway, you are with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And after this break, Leon will tell us some things about 2017. So we'll be back after this song. Maybe he is already gone. That was the Ocean Party with Tell. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Leon.
Yes.
You haven't shut up about this year that was.
Yes.
And you keep saying every week, I should do something about comics and graphic novels and movies and TV.
Graphic novels, yes. I'm big on the novels.
Actually, you know what, Garth? If you want to pick up your latest graphic novels, remember Area 52, 104 Elizabeth Street. They've got, apparently, a huge range of graphic novels.
They do. I have spent many $1,000 there over the years.
All right. Well, tell us about it. What was this year that you talked about that was
so
good
2017?
Or bad or not?
We're just going to have a quick little chat about some stuff that we saw or read or played or what have you throughout the year. Just something interesting, not board game related, just for giggles. So, Marky Mark. So, we're going to talk first about films.
Oh yes.
Now, there's a few that I'm going to mention just quickly, and there are some that I'll probably spend a little more time on.
Yep.
So, Logan was good. This is part where you agree with me.
Oh, yes. I saw that one on the plane to America.
Yes, Logan was good. Baby Driver, which was a film that I would have watched a lot earlier if I knew that Edgar Wright was the director. So I'm glad that I watched it eventually.
Was that the cartoon one where
Baby
was
driver?
Like a,
no.
And baby, it was actually like a man pretending to be a baby.
Is you, that... you mean Boss Baby?
Oh, yeah, there you go. No, no, I didn't see Boy Baby Driver.
You haven't seen... You would love Baby Driver.
Oh, really?
Yes, you absolutely would.
Oh, okay.
Trust me, check it out. Yeah. Get Out, which is a film that's had much, much praise in 2017.
Oh.
Horror film, which is really, really good. Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, yes.
More Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes. I maybe possibly even liked it more than the first one because it tells a more of an intimate story, which I think they did very well. It wasn't as big and flashy, but if anyone knows anything about trilogies, the second one's not supposed to be.
Yeah, okay, because I liked it, but I was like, it just wasn't quite to the heights of the other one, which I guess you expect because
the first one
is all exciting.
Yeah.
You need a bit of a lull in the middle. It sort of went very quiet.
It's not a lull. That's when you tell your story in the middle because your third act is going to go insane.
But look, wasn't there some hilarious parts?
Yes.
The whole thing of those golden dudes, whoever they are, you know, in their video games.
Yes.
That were the spaceships. That whole bit was really funny.
And the Mary Poppins thing, obviously.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Also, probably the funniest film, or one of the funniest films all year, Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, absolutely.
Which was absolute. People might complain, oh, it's just too much jokes and stuff in it. Just enjoy your life, for God's sake.
What do you mean too many jokes, bro? It's full of awesome jokes.
Thor was a comic that for years most people gave no care in the world about, and Marvel have actually made it something that people love now more than ever, so...
No care's really not what you meant to say, was it?
Whatever. You get the idea. Right, now the real good films. Blade Runner. 2049.
I got that here.
Yes, excellent.
It's my film of the year, Leon.
It's your film of the year. I had not seen the original.
Oh, my God, let me out of here!
Anyway, it's one of those films that I probably had seen it all in bits and pieces over the years, but never watched. I watched it from start to finish, the director's cut, which was over 2 hours long, and then went and saw the sequel just after it, which was... So I had an entire day of Blade Running, and I really... I like the new one better than I like the original.
Leon, I have had an entire life of Blade Running. Blade Runner, the original film, is my absolute most favourite film ever.
Wow.
I have just been a huge fan of that film. I just listen to the music all the time from the original film. And for me, the reason that Blade Runner 2049 was my film of the year was... For people like me, it captured a whole bunch of stuff from the original film, but then had a whole bunch of new things that you didn't expect.
Yep.
It didn't do the Star Wars Episode 7 where it was like, Luke's going to be in this, and he's in it for like the last 30 seconds. Harrison Ford came into it much earlier than I expected.
Now, I've not seen this, so yeah.
I'm not going to spoil anything. It just, you know, the visuals were stunning like the original film, but really different. The story that it told was very different, and there was plot twists and counter twists. I absolutely loved this film. I cannot talk about it highly enough.
Yes, so it is a good film. Trainspotting 2. I've seen the original Trainspotting a good 50 times.
Wow.
I absolutely love the original.
You have a lot of free time on your hands.
I do. And the second one is it as good as the first one? Probably not, but only just. And considering there is over a 20-year gap between these two, the sequel could not have been better. They could not have made a sequel to it like 20 years had gone, and with it being better, in my opinion. And it's something that anyone who'd liked the first one should definitely have a look at.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah,
it's good.
No, it's very
really
good.
I really like it.
Who would have thought... The second or arguably best Batman film ever would be a Lego film. Lego Batman is so good.
Oh, really?
It is absolutely brilliant.
See, I haven't watched it. My son was watching it on Netflix the other day, and I was like, oh, I must watch this.
There is a scene of Lego Batman sitting by himself in a cinema laughing at something that he shouldn't be laughing at, which just had tears running down my face. It's just unbelievable. Another film, which is probably my film of 2017, because the one on the top of my list technically came out at the end of 2016. I just watched recently, is It.
Okay.
So the remake of the Stephen King book originally, horror, which then was made into a film.
And the original was called It as well,
It was indeed.
Okay,
It was indeed. It is really, really good. And if anyone likes Stranger Things, one of the main kids from that is in It.
Ah.
And it's just really well acted by all the children as well as It itself. And it's definitely worth checking. Even if you're not a big horror fan, I would almost suggest checking
Pennywise, isn't that his
Pennywise
name?
Pennywise is the name of the clown in it. Yeah. And my favourite film I saw last year, even though it came out at the end of 2016.
Moana.
No. By a Country Mile is a film from South Korea called The Handmaiden.
Oh, yeah, you've mentioned this one a few times.
It is amazing.
Softcore porn combined with wrestling, isn't it? Is that why you love it?
There's nothing about wrestling, but the first bit's not far off. But, yeah, no, it is an absolutely brilliant, brilliant film. Oh, The Handmaiden, I cannot recommend it enough.
Look, a couple more I wanted to mention. Yep. Wonder Woman.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. And what was interesting for me was comparing the way that was shot when you compare what they did with Justice League. For example, Justice League had the obligatory upskirt shot almost of Wonder Woman fighting. Nothing like that in Wonder Woman. They really treated her with a lot of respect. The latest Star Wars obviously came out right at the end of the year.
Yep.
I love that because they did a thing which you don't see in many big saga films like that, is that the little plots were going along the line. Mm. They kept failing. It's like, how many times do you go, this is a 100-to-1 shot, and they make it. And the story you think, oh, well, if they didn't make that. Whereas this had a lot of things where they didn't make it, and it didn't work out, and they still had to struggle through adversity and get to that. So I really liked that. And I also just saw, just before the end of the year, Murder on the Orient Express. Mm. Now, I had never read the book, and I hadn't seen the movie before. We, Garth, have been playing a Cthulhu campaign.
We have.
Horror on the Orient Express.
But only for the last 2 years.
That's right. And for me, I mean, it was a great movie, and what's his name? Hercule Poirot was played by Kenneth Branagh, who was also the director. His moustache had a life of its own. But to watch that movie, having been playing Murder on the Orient Express and being shown what the carriages look like, where the conductor sits, what the dining car looks like, to me really helped suck me into that world. So I quite liked that one. And I would like to mention my dog of the year.
Yeah.
I got two.
Yeah.
Alien Covenant.
Oh, God.
It was rubbish.
It didn't encourage you to play the flute?
Oh, my goodness.
Into your own mouth? Oh, yeah. Love it.
That was so bad.
And one I didn't see at the movies and I saw it on Netflix and I wished I hadn't.
Yeah.
The Circle. Have you seen that?
I've heard not good things.
It's basically like what Facebook was like if Facebook was this like global dominating thing. Tom Hanks is sort of the Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
And it's rubbish.
There was a film that came out years ago called Circle, which is like 100 people wake up and they're in a room all in a circle and they all start dying one off each other and they don't know why. It is brilliant.
I was going to say, that sounds like a really good film compared to this.
It's like a giant film of werewolf all in one.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll move on to the small screen, which is as good as the big screen for years and years now.
Yeah.
The old television. So a show that came out in England last year and has just hit Netflix this week, the end of the F**king world, which I just watched recently with my wife, but I've had for ages to watch, is really, really good.
Okay, I've only seen the trailer for that. I'm really captivated by the two lead characters. They look really intriguing. Yeah. They look like you just want to watch them.
It's 8 episodes long.
Okay.
Each episode is 20 minutes long.
I'm sure they haven't done the opposite thing they normally do, but there was an American show, and it had the comedian Christian Schaal, who was in the Flight of the Conchords.
Oh, yes.
And, she's like the last woman left alive and there's the last guy left alive. That sort of thing, but it's a bit more of a comedy.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember what that's called now because there was a show that was like, that could be good.
And then Last Woman on Planet or something.
No, because it was about the guy. He was the main character.
It's called The Last Man on Earth.
Oh, something like that. Either way.
Doesn't sound anything like what this one is.
And even though it's not a TV show, but I've watched it for like over 100 hours now, just a quick shout out to the RPG I've mentioned a couple of times that I'm watching on YouTube, The High Rollers, which has got like 70-odd episodes.
Yeah.
I'm up to like 50-odd now, which if you extrapolate that I've only been watching it for like 2 months, the amount of free time I do have on my hands, but I've been watching it with my wife, so it's fine. That is awesome. And like I said, on YouTube, so free for everybody. Handmaiden's Tale came out last year and is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
It is intense and is not for the lighthearted.
Oh, yeah.
That's for true. But it's definitely worth watching.
I really can't wait till they get season 2 out. I was slow on to that one.
Yep.
But that whole dystopian future.
Yep.
And the story it tells, I loved it. And I didn't even know about the novels.
Yep.
But apparently it's quite true to the novels. I really enjoyed that one.
A show, it didn't come out last year, but a lot of people have just got onto it because it's on Netflix. Possibly my favourite TV show ever, from a serious standpoint, is Black Mirror.
Yeah, I've been waiting for you to say that one.
Black Mirror is anybody listening who hasn't, for the love of God, watch Black Mirror. It's so, and watch it from the start, the ones that came out years ago. There's like 19 episodes. Yep. There's one or two that are a bit eh, and then like 15 of them that are just like, well, this is better than nearly any film I've ever seen.
The thing is, though, and I've not watched many. I've watched maybe four or five. Is that every time I finish watching one of those episodes, I feel like I need a shower. I feel like humanity is completely destroyed. You'd never leave those shows going, oh, it's all unicorns and rainbows, and let me go and hug a stranger.
That's because the world is a horrible place. We just forget because we like board games.
I'm like Garth. I think I watched the first series, and a couple I liked and a couple I didn't. I've watched all of the latest series, and they are great. Yeah. And Be Right Back.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
Yeah, there's lots of different episodes that I'm not going to bother naming all of them. Yeah, because I go on for hours, but they're all pretty good.
They're just like mini movies. Yeah. Where they've shrunk the story down into an hour or just over an hour. I mean, great storytelling.
Now, yeah. I've not seen any of the latest series. Have they got lots of big-name actors again? Because they had a couple of big names in there before.
Some. I wouldn't say big name, but there's a couple of faces that you'd know in there.
All right.
Dirk Gently, Holistic Detective.
Yep.
A show that we all watched last year.
Yep.
And it's weird as hell, but it's good and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Big Mouth, which is a cartoon, which came to Netflix, which is by half of the guys that used to be in the show The League,
yep.
Which is amazingly funny show in that cartoon. Another thing that a lot of people have got onto, The Good Place, which is a very interesting comedy about heaven, or is it, or isn't it?
That's Christian Bell and, was it Ted Danson?
Ted Danson, yeah. Who's it's the best thing he's done, obviously, since, you know, I think Cheers was the thing he did or whatever.
Oh, what about Becker? When he played that cranky doctor.
Let's not talk of Becker. Another quick one, which didn't come out last year, but just the year before, was Harmon Quest, which is the RPG by the director of Community and Rick and Morty. They go through their RPG they play every week, and then they animate it, which is very entertaining. But my show of the year was a show called Future Man.
Okay.
Ooh. Which I can't really explain and do it justice, because, again, it is a bit odd, but it's kind of half sci-fi, but it's comedy, it's quite rude, and it's just something that I think it's flown under the radar a little bit, and it's really, really good.
And where do I watch this?
On your television.
Through what service?
There are ways to find things.
Okay. So it's not on Netflix, is that what you're saying?
It's not. I think it might be on Stan. Yeah, I can't remember exactly. Look, it's on one of them.
I got a couple more that I've been mentioning, because I do watch a bit of Netflix.
Mm. I think you guys need to stop watching TV and start playing solo board games.
No.
Because I have watched maybe 1% of what you guys have
talking
about.
Leon's watched a lot more than me, but I'll mention a couple. So I caught up on season one, and then I watched season two of The Expanse, which I loved, and really excited to play The Expanse board game. Punisher, which was just, you know, released right at the end of the year. I really loved that. I've been a fan of most of the Marvel TV shows, and I must admit, my dog of the year was a tie between The Defenders and Iron Fist.
Defenders was a lot better than Iron Fist.
Oh, I don't know. It had so much going for it, and it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Star Trek Discovery. I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I've really been enjoying where they've taken that.
It's on my list when I get some free time.
Yeah. of course, Stranger Things 2 I really enjoyed.
I would Game of Thrones as well, but who needs to say that?
Yeah, well, I wasn't even going to mention Game of Thrones. Look, one that I've got on my list, it's controversial, 13 Reasons Why, about the teenage girl that committed suicide.
Yeah, no, it was very good.
I was so hooked on it, binged it in about 3 or 4 days, and I must admit, I was very impacted by the last couple of episodes where they actually showed her killing herself. It was extremely graphic, and I was horrified.
Yeah.
And I think they've canned the sequel because of that, because it was almost a how to kill yourself visual tutorial. They didn't need to be so graphic, but the story it told and how that changed the perspectives was brilliant storytelling.
But the awareness that show got out, I don't care how graphic it was, I think they should have do that show like that every year, just because of the awareness it gets out there.
Yeah.
The fact that it's graphic isn't here nor there.
And for me, and I'm surprised you didn't mention it, Leon, my show of the year was Mindhunter.
I haven't watched it yet.
I like a criminal show, but they're just, I don't know, they're just so bland. Your CSIs and all those. I don't like any of those. But this is set in the 50s, where they're first starting to look at the psychology of criminals, and that it's just not bad guys doing bad things, and how they start going out and talking to cops and helping cops solve local crimes, and then they go into jails and interview serial killers. And I loved it. You know, I mean, the set in the 50s, the music and everything was really cool. But just the way it flows along and grows and the characters, if you haven't seen Mindhunter, it is fantastic.
And is it David Fincher who directed it?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah, so I've watched a couple of episodes of that, not many. But I think because it's now been a couple of months, I'll go back and start from episode one again and just watch it again.
Definitely.
Because, yeah, it was brilliant.
Okay, so the rest of the stuff I will kind of hammer through because there's stuff that's in my realm but not you old fellas.
All right, got a couple of minutes.
Yes, I know. So the video games, so I'll just talk about the top couple, but I'll mention the rest on my list.
Tetris 2017.
Shut up. Sonic Mania, Nier Automata, Nioh, Sexy Brutale, Mario Odyssey. All brilliant games worth playing. My top three were Resident Evil 7, which is the best Resident Evil game since 4, so very, very good. Uncharted Lost Legacy, which is a game that was about half price of a normal game and is maybe the best Uncharted game ever. And my game of the year was Horizon Zero Dawn. The elevator pitch of that game is a grown-up version of Zelda where you're fighting robot dinosaurs. So that alone should get anybody.
If only I could get my computer working.
And part of the reason that we haven't seen Trent much is because he has been stuck on the final level of that for maybe a month.
Really? Didn't take me too long. Yeah. Another thing I needed to quickly mention during the TV show, if anybody hasn't seen the show Taskmaster, the British show, or Dave Gorman's Modern Life is Goodish, they're the two funniest shows on TV by a mile, so watch them. Then the comics, again, I'll quickly go through them. They didn't all come out last year, but they're series that I got into last year. The Fix, which is about two crooked cops. Clean Room, which is about crazy demon things. Giant Days, which is about three college girls in England.
And is Days D-A-Z-E?
No.
Ooh,
yeah.
Missed an opportunity there.
Demon, which is about a guy who every time he dies, he takes over the body of the person next to him, no matter where he is. So somebody through a wall, somebody across the road if there's nobody else around, and the FBI agent that's trying to hunt him and trying to think, how on earth am I going to capture this guy? And my my comic series of the year, even though it didn't technically start last year, was a series called March, which is about the civil rights movement in America.
Okay.
And it is absolutely, anybody that reads any graphic novels should read March. It is brilliant. And then the final thing I've got on here was just, I wrote down, what are some of the things that I did in the year? And I wrote down quickly, went on ABC Radio, hosted 4 werewolf events for over 80 people each time, bought a house, got promoted, and went to Japan.
Yeah.
They're the things I did last year.
Wow.
Exactly. Not a bad 2017.
So if at any point any listener hears me sounding depressed, please remind me of the things that I did.
Yeah.
Because I have no reason in the world to be an unhappy man.
You don't.
No, I don't.
So you should smile and show your teeth more.
No, because I've got that weird crooked one. I don't like it.
All right, anyway. Well, look, we're going to throw to a song because that was all that there was in 2017, or was it? Because I might have to give you a little bit of what were the best apps for all of last year. So we'll throw to a song and then I'll get to do a little bit of talking before we get out of here.
Okay.
And play some Ifnos.
Yes.
Hopefully. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Yeah, keep on, Ryan Downey, you chainmail maker. You're with Edge Radio on, where are we? 99.3 FM. Where the Dice Men Cometh. I'm not sure if I'm asleep or depressed after that song. You were talking about having a good year, Leon.
And not trying to be depressed anymore. And then you put that on, for the love of God. Anyway, why don't you go into Area 52 and buy yourself nice something nice and shiny to cheer
yourself up. Some of those graphic noggles that you mentioned.
And some of those Funko poop figures. Anyway, Garth.
And London Gred.
London Gred. We had a competition we had to draw.
We did. Oh, man.
Yep.
English is not so goodly.
Nope.
Okay. We did and do have a competition, and we've wrapped that one up with thanks very much to the Campaigner magazine. Now, after receiving all the entries, alphabetizing them, randomizing them, putting them in a shredder, then slowly manipulating them and getting the answers out, we have come to a winner.
Ooh.
And the winner will get a full year's subscription from the Campaigner magazine.
To the print magazine.
I know, which is awesome. And the winner, without further ado, is one Mr. Brett Harris.
Yay!
So, Brett, keep an ear and eye and another eye, if you've got two, out for an email from us so that you will be known as the winner.
Yes.
And I will obviously also let Matt from the Campaigner magazine know so that he can send you a copy.
Yeah.
And then another copy. And then another copy and another copy because they're going to be 4 copies in a year.
That's how that works.
Fantastic. Now, Garth, you've got a quick rundown for us in the last few minutes we've got.
Yep.
of the top board game apps.
Yeah, so
in,
look,
2017.
This is going to be really short and sweet because at every year, Board Game Geek, little website that we might use for research purposes every now and again, puts it out there and says, okay, community, board game community, just go and vote and tell us what you think the best apps are for the year. So I thought, I do apps every so often. I play apps. I sit on the toilet like everybody else. Yeah. So why not talk about the apps that we use? So these are the community voted apps for 2017. Now, the caveat, unlike all of the other ones, this is not apps that were released in 2017. It's just what are the most popular ones that people have been playing. So number 10, a little game called Agricola, or you might know as Agricola.
Yes.
So
do it for all of them, please.
It is a great representation of a very classic board game, but as someone who owns the game and paid dollary dues for it, I don't play it that much because I don't like the interface, even though it looks really pretty. It's a basically a top-down view of a village where you can go and get your wood and your thingy-bobs. I just want the board. I just want to know what to do.
Can I read out number 9, please?
Yes.
Pandemic.
Yes, it is Pandemic or Pandemic, as they say in the funny pages. Everyone's working together to save the world. It looks good. It is more fun than Pandemic Legacy.
Galaxy Tracker?
Yeah, Galaxy Tracker by... I don't even want to do any injustice to his particular name, but...
Vladachvartel.
Yeah, Galaxy Tracker is still one of the best apps and such a great way to just waste some time. We've then got Spelendor. Now, I can't really do too much with Spelendor, but it's Spelendor.
Yeah.
Again, beautiful game. I played this with randoms in Lao because there was Wi-Fi connection and it was easy enough to teach. Really, really good.
Ras for the Galaxy.
I think it's you'll find it's pronounced Rache.
Oh, Rache.
Rache for the Galaxy. So Race for the Galaxy. This app has had so much popularity. It's not cheap. It's about $10. Now, I can't pay $10 for a game that I know how to play and that I play quite regularly on Board Game Arena for $0, but it's meant to be really good.
Carcass 1.
Carcass One, perpetual favourite. It is still beautiful. Great implementation of a very classic game. Needs more of the expansions, but I think it's just a simple game done good.
Lords of Watered Eep.
It's pronounced L-Ords. L-Ords of Watered Eep. Again, geez, this is a classic. Been around forever. Play it if you like the game. It's not my cup of tea, but it is a classic for a lot of people. All right, number 3.
Though the Aegis.
Oh, dear. So, yes.
Oh, through, not though.
Not though. No, so through the ages. This game app has come out only relatively recently, the last few months. And, look, the game itself is number 2 or 3 on Board Game Geek's hottest list, as in the ranking. You know, it's a massive game. This is a great introduction for a game that is very complicated and very long and very tricky. So get it before you buy the physical
game.
I'm
actually playing a game through the ages on BGA with Chad from Of Dice and Men, our Canadian friends.
All right, we don't have time to talk about that. Number 2 is T-Ick Et to Riday. Ticket to Ride, a game that I have never played.
Ticket to Duluth.
So good. I played it a few times over Christmas. It is so good.
Yeah, I played it again recently. Okay. And
then the number 1 game, according to the BGG community, which I disagree with completely, Star Realms.
Oh.
Now, well, that was anticlimactic.
Really?
The game is good, but it's not number 1 good for me. No Seven Wonders app?
Yeah, Twilight Struggle.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought I'd put it out there. For anyone who is wanting to get more apps, start with the top 10. You will definitely find something that is easy, that is fun. You can play with either by yourself or you can play with randoms around the world or with robots.
So since we had to hammer through that list as well as our own list that we talked to, if you ever want to know more about any of the stuff we've mentioned, feel free to give us a message on the old Facebooks or the follows on the Instagrams or the Twitters. We're on all the things.
We passed 1,600 followers on Instagram. But we got
to
go.
We do have to go. We're out of time, but we'll talk to you all next week. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Ooh-yah.
Bye.
This has been another episode of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, offering comics, books, card games and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au. And find us online at thedicemencometh.com.